Welcome to today's Job Seeker broadcast. Our topic is five factors that determine job obsolescence and how to avoid them. Now, we know that as a job hunter, you watch the news, you talk to your employer friend, and you scan vacancy notices. But what if you're considering a job that will disappear in the next 3 years or even sooner? I encourage you to stay tuned as we have some very, very helpful advice so that you won't be perpetually unemployed. To help me discuss this topic, I'm joined by a special guest, Linda Baugh, out of Scottsdale, Arizona. Linda is one of our 12 preferred counselors featured on our website, and you can see Linda's picture and bio. Just click Preferred Counselors on our toolbar. Hello there, Linda.
Hi, John. Glad to be with you today.
Yes, and it's certainly glad to have you. I think you are especially positioned, offer some very unique insights, and hopefully between the two of us, we're really going to come up with some good information today. You've been helping men and women advance in their careers since 1985. You're president and founder of ACE Executive Careers in Scottsdale, Arizona, and you began your profession, as I did, as a headhunter many, many years ago.
Mm-hmm.
That's where you learned how to help people get hired, and boy, does that make all the difference, is understanding how to help people get hired. And from there, you expanded your expertise to include helping clients at mid-career so that they could find their occupational sweet spot. And Linda, you've published numerous articles, you're a sought-after speaker, and a very, very delightful addition to our broadcast. So thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you, John.
As we discuss our topic for the first 30 minutes, we should be able to really deliver some good, helpful insights and equip our listener to avoid that pit hole. Following that first 30 minutes, we'll then turn to answering job seeker questions, which we receive throughout the week and even during our show. So, Linda, let's jump in here and deal with these five factors that determine job obsolescence. And I think what we're seeing today is several major factors that are turning the security of jobs upside down. It just isn't like when you and I first joined the workforce. Things are just moving at a rapid pace, and to be a smart job hunter, I think what the bottom line to the show today is, you have to do that extra research to protect yourself from getting a job that in just a few years is going to disappear. Now, the factors that are obvious that we're seeing every day are the slow economy, multiple layoffs, high unemployment, and corporations outsourcing of jobs overseas. And all of these factors together makes us think twice about avoiding a job that will be phased out. Well, it's not just about these obvious factors. There's some other issues that we're going to explore. And so we have obviously noted several industries that are on the rise. That's the good news. Industries like medical and retirement service or baby boomers got a huge surge of baby boomers and all the services that are going to accommodate them. We have that exploding surge of information technology and all the startups and all the advances and innovations. We have tremendous advances occurring in medical technology. All of those are obvious. But on the other hand, there are jobs and companies which have been household names and standards for years. They're just phasing out. They're being replaced by automation. and they're even left in the dust by the loss of consumer demand. Now, Linda, as you and I prepared for this show, you indicated that you've learned some interesting information from the Department of Labor that's making some predictions concerning industries and jobs from the future. Tell us what you've learned here.
Well, John, thank you so much. And I'd like to make sure, you know, our audience realizes that our interest in presenting this information is really for a diverse group. This information could be valuable to someone deciding what major they're going to have in college. It can also be for someone who's in a midlife career transition and wanting to make a good, solid decision about that next chapter of their career.
Yeah, and I would even add to that, you're absolutely right, but I'd even add to that, it could be someone that's been in a profession such as an electrician or a med tech worker, and all they're doing is they're applying for that very same job with a new employer, and lo and behold, that new employer is on a steady decline and may be out of business in the next 2 years, and they don't even know that. So it's not just industries being phased out by advances in technology. It's also companies that are not keeping up and because of the economy, because of foreign competition, and we need to include that group as well. So tell us what the Department of Labor is predicting.
Well, we'll do it this way. We'll do the good news, bad news, and here comes the bad news first. And these are the areas. These are the areas that are declining. Farming, fishing, and forestry is on decline. Production type of work, factory type of any sort of production work, even that has to do with making of garments or shoes or anything like that. Also on the decline is going to be office and administrative professionals because technology is taking over so many of the functions. You might be surprised, architecture and even some engineering is going to be really slow in terms of growth. And arts and design, and here's a surprise for everyone, maybe we'll be happy about, telemarketing. Because, that's in the decline because so many people are being able to say no, using different technology that they're not going to be receiving those calls. So that's the decline. On the upswing, and you really gave a preview of coming attractions, John, but on the upswing, when I took a look at Career One Step, which is Department of Labor for the next up to the year 2020, six out of 10 have to do with health. Number one, services for the elderly and persons with disabilities, home health services, mental health services, physical, occupational, and speech therapists, community care facilities for the elderly. If I were making a decision right now where I might want to put my, my talents, it could very well be in one of those areas.
Mm-hmm. Are there any others?
Yes, there are. There's some secondary areas, and I'm looking at the top 25 fastest growing industries. And right behind those, we've got computer and information technology, which I think you also had predicted. And this might surprise you a little bit. Some construction areas, including masonry, are going to have some growth. Satellite communications, education support services, and for people that are considering they might want to get into consulting, management consulting, scientific and technical consulting. Now, John, I wanted to ask you this. I'm seeing a lot of companies switching to bringing people on board on contract, consulting, temporary assignments, rather than full-time employment. What are you seeing?
Yes, I have also seen that, Linda, and I think that is more of a product of the slow economy that organizations are doing this because they don't want the cost of bringing somebody on full time with benefits in case the project that they're hired for doesn't work out. I've also noticed that companies are being very careful in new hires, and they're hiring individuals as temporary or short-term as a means to further investigate. So they're being cautious. In a normal situation, employers want somebody yesterday, and they wouldn't take that cautious approach. So the Labor Department's going to be tabulating these higher consulting hires when, in fact, they're just a product of the economy. Now, the things that are, I think, of particular note that our listener wants to be aware of are the factors that they can be researching in order to protect themselves from the future. And we're not just saying these trends that department, anybody can Google and get that Department of Labor information, but there's much, much more of that. With the speed of information now at all levels, it appears that everything is moving faster. So companies are growing
exponentially.
Yeah, they're growing faster, and also they're declining faster, and the word is getting out faster. And so we just want our listener to be aware. And let's take these one at a time. I'm going to give you give our listener the list, and let's just whack away at these one at a time. These are the five predictive factors that will help somebody understand how stable a future job might be. So here they go. Number one, changes in the economy. Number two, foreign competition. Number three, government regulations. Number four, loss of market share or loss of growth. And number five, technology advances. So any one or a combination of these will undermine the stability of a single company. So it doesn't have to just be a trend that the Department of Labor is predicting. We're talking one company at a time that is experiencing a difficulty in any one of these areas. So let's tackle the first one, Linda. Changes in the economy. Now, we have been in a slow economy for some time. And as they say, when things slow down, you're starting to separate the sheep from the goats. Those that are going to survive and those that are barely hanging on. The ones that are surviving are gobbling up the market share of the ones that are barely hanging on. And so what our listener wants to do is do the research to find out what is the growth pattern of the company in, say, the past 3 years, including up to today. Is it? It could be growing slowly, but the point is it growing? That's the point. If it's leveling off, that's okay. Growing would be an A. Leveling off is a B. But if there's a slight dip, now we're moving to C, C minus, and so on. So there's a caution. Now, when the job seeker goes into the interview, you don't want to comment on, well, I noticed that your sales are starting to slow down. We'll pick this up after the break, Linda.
Great.
Okay, John, we have a short 2-minute break. Today we've been talking about job search tips, but you do a lot more for men and women who are struggling with mid-career issues.
That's right, Evan, we do. We help men and women find that career sweet spot which can give meaning and purpose to their life.
So, John, what about boomers, those who are approaching retirement age? There are a lot of us out there.
That's right, Evan, many millions. We provide very specific help to boomers and their families.
You mean that the choice what to do after retirement is just as important as selecting one's career at 20 years of age?
Well, Evan, think on this. Let's say you've been grinding it out, just waiting for that 25-year goal pin, and now that's where you are. Does that mean your life of significance and purpose ends? You've heard that the new 65 is the old 45. A person still has 10, 15, maybe 20 more productive years ahead of them.
Well, I never thought of it that way.
Well, we help adults, many adults, find that ideal post-retirement career. For once, they don't have to be trapped into their occupation. They can be free to choose to give it back to make a difference.
But John, why couldn't a mid-30s person choose to do that?
Well, they most certainly can, and I hope they will. But some of us have been so close to the grindstone of work that we have never considered looking into the future of making a difference or giving back.
Okay, John. I want to discuss this further, that is, considering a purpose for what we do beyond a paycheck and benefits. Can we talk some more about this during the next break?
Sure, you bet.
If you just tuned in, our Job Seeker Weekly broadcast is sponsored by the IDAC Group, hosted by job search and career advancement expert John Bradley. John has been coaching men and women since the mid-70s to find fulfilling work. I'm Evan Newman. You can join our discussion today by emailing us your job search questions. Those questions received during the live broadcast will be given John's priority for discussion. Our address for questions is jobseeker@idacgroup.com. That's jobseeker@idacgroup.com. John, let's return to our broadcast.
And we're back to our Job Seeker broadcast. My special guest today is Counselor Linda Baugh from Scottsdale, Arizona. Linda is one of our 12 preferred counselors featured on our website. And if you just tuned in, you can see Linda's picture and bio on our website. Just click on Preferred Counselor. And just before the break, we were talking about the first of five factors which will help determine job stability. And that was understanding how the changes in the economy are affecting that particular company that you're applying for. And what we're saying here is that there's a vacancy posted, and you're going through the long process of making application. And the question is, how do you know that that company isn't going to be laying off in the next 6 months? They may have an immediate need right now, but that doesn't mean that they're stable and secure. And the most important factor is to find out if the company is growing or if it's holding its own. But if it's showing some kind of decline, then red flags ought to be popping up right away. You can find information about a company through various sources, including asking for assistance from your Metro Library for the service they provide as a reference librarian. You can ask specifically about a particular company, and they'll do the homework for you and get you clued in on how to get that information. It's certainly not going to be on an organization's website, I can tell you that. Now, Linda, as we talk about changes in the economy and how it affects the stability of somebody's future job with that company, any other thoughts before we go to the second factor?
Well, this might sound a little simple, but you know, the rumor mill still works. The grapevine still works. And a lot of times I'll advise someone, if they can find someone on LinkedIn who's a former employee of that company who recently left, and just, you know, chat with them and say, you know, I'm considering such and such company, and, you know, before I head out for the interview, I just wanted to talk with some people who've worked for the company before and just get your thoughts.
That's
and I'll
excellent.
Give you a wonderful example. I talked with a gentleman today who is wanting to leave a company, and he said, here's how bad things are. He said they took the cell phones away from the delivery drivers.
Oh.
You know, a little bit, you know, if you got a little bit of that kind of rumor mill information, that's telling you something.
Yeah, well, now that you're mentioning that, I'm thinking of a client, and within the first 30 days that he was employed, the company, he discovered this policy, and that was if you order any materials to do the job you're doing, you have to pay with your own personal credit card, and the company will reimburse you. Why are they doing that?
Yikes.
Because the company credit is no longer there.
Right.
That means they owe money that they're not able to pay. And he didn't know this at the time he started. Within about a month and a half, the boss had hired him and had let go. Half the department had been let go. This is current today. He's still employed there. He's doing a great job. But the likelihood that the company's going to survive is who's to know? And certainly he is back hitting the pavement looking for new employment. So the economy is going to impact every company in a different way depending on how smart management has been, how careful they've been with their money, their expenses, their innovations. So that is one factor. Let's go to the second one, and that's foreign competition. Foreign competition means that because of the advance in communication, some innovative product invented in Sweden or Germany or even Indonesia is now competing with this mom-and-pop shop manufacturing plant right in rural, in the rural eastern part of the state. It never used to be that way, but now it is because people can find places to buy things that never were available ever before. And not only that, they can find out what other people say is the opinion that people have about that company or that brand or the reliability of that product very quickly. So some unheard of operation that just popped up in Argentina, as long as they have satisfied customers, is now a realistic option for somebody in Dayton, Ohio, as far as a consumer buying a product. And that is a huge issue. Any further thoughts, Linda, on how foreign competition is a factor in one's job stability?
Well, I was wondering, John, if when you mentioned that, you were also thinking about outsourcing, where, you know, I talked with a help desk person just this morning, and I know this person was not in the country. So besides the products coming in, you know, the actual work is being outsourced, and Indonesia is huge for some of this work. Yeah.
Well, yeah, Indonesia, India, Pakistan, definitely Taiwan and other Taiwan and China, huge organizations there that provide manufacturing services. So yes, I did have that in mind. But I'm also saying that we're now into a global economy, and we have to be thinking in that context. So it would be a smart research query to ask the question, as you said, somebody that already works in the company, how is your company dealing with this rampant access that the consumer has to foreign competition? Tires and manufactured items and clothing and on it goes.
Well, do you mind if I slip in a little observation here?
Do it.
When we were at the very beginning, we were talking about the growing industry, services for the elderly and persons with disabilities, home health care services, mental health services, physical, occupational, speech therapists, community care facilities. What all of these have in common is they can't be done from afar. These are all services, like an optometrist is also on the list here for us. They're all jobs that you have to be here to do them. So they're not going to be outsourced. You know, these particular jobs are not going to go somewhere else.
And most likely, not only are they not going to go somewhere else, but you can't find an optometrist in Oslo or Norway to provide that service for you here.
Mm-hmm.
But I do know, as a fact, one of our very large client companies is a large dental laboratory that makes the dental crowns and appliances, and there has been a huge surge of contracting with a Norwegian or Swedish company that actually does air transport express delivery of these crowns and bridges and so on, and saves money for that company rather than doing it locally because they're all computerized.
Wow.
And the American technology hasn't caught up. So that's just an interesting factor in that one area of dental technology. Okay, let's move ahead to government regulations. Usually large decisions regarding regulations are published in some form of news media. They're not a surprise to people. What is a surprise is a trickle-down effect that it has. And the most recent example is what is called the Obamacare. And we as consumers are just beginning to wake up to understand the huge shakeup in insurance and medical care that Obamacare has brought about. And that's what we're talking about. Now, where to get the information is from the source. You want to be aware that that government regulations change what companies can and can't do or make it more or less expensive, and that's going to impact their bottom line. And so, again, another question to ask someone on the inside of a company, can you tell me if there are any recent government regulations that have impacted the growth and stability of your company? That would be that simple question to ask.
That's a great question.
Yeah, any other thoughts you have on this, on how government regulations impact job stability?
Well, I'm in agreement with you to ask someone in the company who is going to be familiar with how regulations are going to impact them, because this is just my personal opinion, John, but the media often gets it wrong, or they inflate it and dramatize regulations to the point where we're all in fear when the facts may be totally different. So I would say forget about the media, ask somebody directly at the company.
Yeah.
But exactly as you stated it, are there any regulations being implemented that are going to have an impact on how you do business?
Yeah, that have to do with the future growth and stability.
Yep.
Another excellent place to get firsthand information, if you're looking at a broad stroke of impact on industries, is a national association of that industry.
Yeah,
and you can contact the National Medical Association, the National Association of Air Transport Workers, the National Association of Printers, and National Association of Farmers, and on. There are millions of these, and that is their job. It's to be ahead of these things and to provide that information. But we're also saying that the industry may be doing fine, but company A, B, and C may be in trouble because they weren't doing their homework. And our job seeker needs to understand from one company at a time, is this company in violation? Are they hanging in there? Are they ahead of the trend when it comes
to
government regulation?
John, I have to tell you that one of my clients...
Okay, we'll have to wait for the break, Linda.
Afterwards, I'll tell you a great story.
We're taking a short 2-minute break to ask John Bradley some questions about pursuing a post-retirement career to give back, to give meaning and purpose. John, in our last break, you suggested that the idea of a career being something bigger than a paycheck is a worthy thought for a boomer, but also for a 30-something career seeker.
That's right, Evan. We can truly choose a post-retirement career as well as an occupation which provides sufficient income, stability, vacation perks, and still make a difference. And that's because our team has a working knowledge of over 90,000 careers, and many of those fit that description.
Well, John, why wouldn't everyone want meaning and purpose?
Well, unfortunately, many of us have not considered that final layer of preference for our retirement or our present work life. We kind of get caught up in the trap of staying employed and reading all the How to Succeed, Move Up the Ladder books and blogs. Many of those helps are valid, but they may not be the best for everyone.
Well, John, for the next break, could you give us some examples of the difference between grinding out a job and finding a career which provides meaning and purpose, even for someone like a boomer?
Sure, let's do it.
Thanks, John. If you just turned in, our Job Seeker weekly broadcast is sponsored by the IDEC Group, hosted by job search and career advancement expert John Bradley. John has been coaching men and women since the mid-70s to find fulfilling work. I'm Evan Newman. You can join our discussion today by emailing us your job search questions. Those questions received during the live broadcast will be given John's priority for discussion. Our address for questions is jobseeker@idacgroup.com. That's jobseeker@idacgroup.com. John, let's return to our broadcast.
And we're back to our Job Seeker broadcast. We're talking about factors that determine job obsolescence and how to avoid them. My co-host today is Counselor Linda Baugh from Scottsdale, Arizona. Linda is one of our 12 preferred counselors featured on our website. If you just tuned in, you can see Linda's picture and bio on our website. Just click on Preferred Counselors on the toolbar there at the top of our home web page. Now, Linda, you were about to tell a story. The break just cut you right off, having to do with how government regulations will indicate job stability on a positive or negative side. Were you able to hold your breath there during the you can fire away at this?
This was in the last 7 days. A gentleman that I'm working with that's in the job search, he's been interviewing with two different companies, and he likes both companies, very well. He likes both companies very well. But what he found out about one company is that they have a lot of money tied up in a lawsuit that has to do with some regulations that they did not adhere to. And so he just said to me, he says, you know, I'm not going to go to work for that company because I don't know what their financial future and stability is going to be. So these are important things to know.
Oh, absolutely, yes. And, you and I, as coaches, we provide caution and advice to do that. And I'm certainly glad you're glad. Paid attention and, did his homework. And my client was reluctant to do that and is now paying the price because the company he got hired in is having trouble making payroll, but yet they need the workers to continue working. And so he's caught that squeeze in the middle. And I'm glad I only have one client in that category, and the others are doing much better. Okay, let's move on to the fourth factor that will help determine job stability or job insecurity, and that is loss of market share or loss of growth. So what this means is, has the company been growing? Is it leveled off, or is it declining? And you want to find this out. Now, the causes the causes really don't matter. What matters is the leadership and management team in a place where they have successfully guided, directed this company so that it is meeting the challenges, these huge challenges that are occurring simultaneously today. Have they figured it out, and are they moving ahead? Now, a good number of times what companies will do is, if they're publicly owned, the board that is elected by the shareholders will terminate senior executives and bring in somebody mm-hmm. new that promises this and that. And
right.
it usually takes about a year before that person has proven themselves. And lo and behold, this quick fix didn't quite work, and that person's out in a year and a half. Well, that's going to be a telltale story as to whether a company is moving in the right direction. How recent have they changed their executive, their CEO, or any senior top-level individuals? That would be a good question to ask somebody on the inside. What was it that the last person didn't quite do that the new person is challenged to do? And, quote, how is he or she doing?
Mm-hmm.
That's good. Now, we're seeing very good thoughts, Linda, to the job seeker in terms of cautionary. These are defense maneuverings. But we want to quickly say, during the interview cycle, do not bring up any of these cautious type of questions to the person that is interviewing you. You want to talk to someone else in the company that's not in the loop for your job hunting. Because the minute you touch on a sensitive nerve, this would virtually eliminate you from the interviewing sequence. You want to ask these questions after you get the offer if you haven't found it from some roundabout way. And you would ask these questions regarding foreign competition, change how the economy has impacted the growth of business, and so on and so on. And by saying something like, Mr. Jones, we've spent the last several weeks getting to know me and your team determining whether I can do the job and fit in your culture. And I would just like to take just a little time to better understand you so that I can see how I might be a contribution here. Is there someone that you would recommend that's been here for a while that I could talk to? I have some questions. And then you note how positive or how much delay there is in making that recommendation.
Yes, how reluctant someone might be to let you talk to someone.
Yeah, and if there's any reluctance.
Or eager.
If there's any reluctance at all, then huge red flag, there's something to hide here. Okay, let's move, Linda, to the technology advances. This is probably the zinger. I've saved this one for last. Because of the rapid amount of technology advances that we're experiencing, I mean, it's just virtually a boom. We hear about Silicon Valley. You know, it's very likely every state has its own version of Silicon Valley. And things are exponentially growing because information is so readily available now. You can learn from a discovery that somebody had in Lisbon, Portugal, in real time. I mean, they'll publish it, you learn it, oh, that really helps me with this, and on and on. And so these new products and new discoveries and new advances are happening at a much faster rate. And all that does is it speeds up the growth or the decline of a particular company who have not transformed themselves to stay ahead of the curve. Linda, any more thoughts on that particular factor in terms of how it impacts job stability?
Well, I think the big word here is exponential. I'm just going to quote to you. Moore's Law is the observation that over the history of computing hardware, the number of transistors on integrated circuits doubles approximately every 2 years. Now it's down to 18 months, and I think it's even less than that. So our point to our audience is to stay up on any training that they need to have.
Absolutely, yes, and that is something you and I had talked about. There are certain industries that if you choose to go into that field, into that occupation, you are also making a choice to be in the classroom for your work life.
Yes. Exactly.
And these
yeah.
types of industries, they're pretty much self-explanatory. Medical technology, health services, engineering, architecture, teaching, any kind of science-related research, financial services, business consulting, information technology, human resources, anything to do with protecting the environment, managing the environment, developing products to protect the emission control systems and on and on, all of that environmental-related technology.
Mm-hmm.
It's evolving so quickly that in 1 year, whatever you knew or you were educated in, it's outdated. And you've got to stay ahead. Therefore, if you choose an occupation in that direction, you're also choosing to stay in the classroom, which is fine.
Mm-hmm.
You just need to be aware that you've made that choice. And it would appear to me reasonable that if I was an employer in those industries, that's one of the questions I would ask. What are your plans for continuing
mm-hmm.
education?
Mm-hmm.
And if the candidate hesitates on that, well, that would be a red flag.
It would be, and then a good question for the candidate would be, what provisions do you have for training for people in this position?
Absolutely. Is the company helping subsidize
mm-hmm.
the continuous
right.
costs of education? Are they helping with membership fees to professional associations so that the employee can continue to stay abreast? I would even say this would be a time where a grade point average just might be a little bit of an edge. If you have a higher grade point average, I'm talking about 3.0 or better, that is an indication that school comes easy for you, and therefore it's not going to be a stressor to continue learning, whereas a less than a 3-point is going to be an indicator that classroom instruction is not a favorite, whether it's online or a traditional classroom. And that might be a factor as an employment hiring criteria. So, well, Linda, I think we've pretty much saturated this topic. It's just been pretty exciting. Any final comments before we turn to our job seeker questions?
Just to mention the resources of that are online, the Occupational Outlook Handbook from Department of Labor, Career One Stop, again, that is available through the Department of Labor. Great research and statistics that people can find on professions and industries before they make a commitment to them.
And I would also add one in terms of getting right to the bottom line, to the source, www.associationexecs.com. That
mm-hmm.
will take the job seeker right to the index that lists those thousands and thousands of professional associations. And there's nothing better than talking to someone who's an officer with an association that's supposed
mm-hmm.
to be abreast of what's going on and what could be a threat to the industry.
Yeah, that's a great tip.
Let's turn to our job seeker questions, Linda. We've got just a little time left, and pick out some plums there that you've received, and let's take a shot at it.
Well, Ed, here's a good one. My husband has a software consulting business. The poor economy has cut his clients down to about 75%. What advice can you offer?
We're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back to answer that.
We're taking a short 2-minute break at the final quarter of our show to ask John Bradley how one can choose to find meaning and purpose in a post-retirement career, as well as a new 30-something job. John, you started this discussion saying that boomers are now free to choose to pursue something fulfilling, to give back.
That's right, Evan.
And then I ask, why can't a 30-something person make that choice? And you said they could. They just had to be intentional to add that third layer of purpose rather than just the paycheck. So here's my question. Can you give us an example of someone who has done this?
Well, Evan, I recall a client who worked for the same employer for 35 years as a director of quality control and manufacturing. There was a change in management, and our client was transitioned out. As he and I began to discuss his next chapter in life, I challenged him to think about pursuing something that felt like he was making a difference, something meaningful to him.
So this was a real person?
Yes, it was a real person. Let's call him Phil. He had 1 year of community college and felt like his life wouldn't really amount to much. All he thought he could do was find a similar job and then after a few more years retire, buy a big motorhome, and drive coast to coast.
I've seen a few of those.
Well, as we began to explore Phil's aptitude assessment results, he pointed to a couple of the printout options and said, "You know, I always wanted to do something for troubled kids, for teenagers."
So what happened?
A long story short, he got hired by a county government agency to administrate the placement of foster teens in good homes.
Did he have some prior experience to get that?
Not at all. We helped him plan a strategy after he met the person who had his job.
You mean he first looked at several careers you suggested, then chose this one because of the on-site validation visit?
That's right. And in his job search, he bypassed many who had four-year college degrees and even graduate school degrees. And you know, Phil had only 1 year of community college with no prior experience.
Well, I think I'm speaking for our listening audience when I say that this is a great example, and I wish we had time to find out how you helped him do it.
Yes, that's true, Evan, but then that is what these job seeker broadcasts are all about. I am sharing the same things I taught Phil, all these lessons learned, and he did it, and it worked for him.
John, this has been a most interesting journey.
Well, thanks, Evan.
I want to encourage any of you who are feeling the stress of a dead-end job to go to our website, www.idacgroup.com, and make contact with one of our preferred counselors. Each of these seasoned men and women are professionals at helping you discover your wiring. You will see the reference preferred counselors at the top of our toolbar. John, we still have the last quarter of your show.
Let's do it.
If you just tuned in, our Job Seeker Weekly broadcast is sponsored by the IDAC Group, hosted by job search and career advancement expert John Bradley, who has been coaching men and women since the mid-70s to find fulfilling work. I'm Evan Newman. And now, John, let's return to the final quarter of our show.
And we're back to our Job Seeker broadcast. My co-host today is Linda Baugh from Scottsdale, Arizona. Linda is one of our 12 preferred counselors featured on our website. And Linda, we're into that home stretch of our broadcast talking about job seeker questions that we've received. And you were just about ready to launch into a question we received from Lynn in Indio, California. Why don't you read that question again? And I'll
sure.
take a stab at it, and then you tell us how to do it.
Okay. My husband, Lynn, says, my husband has a software consulting business. The poor economy has cut his clients down to about 75%. Can you offer advice?
Well, we have good news and we have bad news here. The good news is that Lynn is representing that her husband, she's not complaining about the consulting work itself. The problem is we have fewer clients. And so we've got to focus on what is the issue that needs resolving, and that is how to get more clients, not how to change careers. And so, Linda, let's you and I give two or three bullet points here on how somebody can upgrade, maximize, stretch, extend. And really, it's not that different than helping somebody conduct their job search. What Lynn's husband needs to do is go back to the drawing board of contacts of previous coworkers. Her husband has been in classes or courses, professors and even graduates of those courses, and meet with them to talk about what they're seeing in the future of the industry and do they have any recommendations as to names of individuals that would represent potential customers for Lynn's husband's business. Unfortunately, what happens in the world of consulting, the consultant is doing what they're doing, that's what they like, and they forget that 50% of staying in business is getting
marketing.
New business.
Right.
Yeah, you know, and 50%. And so that means your job is split. You're working on the project that you just got, but you've got to be thinking ahead and working on the new project. My advice to Lynn's husband is you've got to ramp up on the marketing side. Don't go beat up your current customers. You've got to get back in the saddle and get into a rhythm. And I would say pick the best time of day. Usually it's the morning. And you need to have, I like to tell my clients, 5 telephone calls a day, 1 appointment a day. And so Lynn's husband needs to set a goal like 1 appointment a day minimum where I'm going to go out prospecting. Linda, take it from there.
There's a suggestion that is kind of unusual, and that is to go back to the customers that have already enjoyed and appreciated his business and offer them a very reasonable deal, if you will, like a subscription, a 3-month subscription. I'm on call for you for 3 months, X number of hours per month as you need it for this amount of money.
Kind of like a retainer.
Kind of like a retainer. Mm-hmm. But he could make it very reasonable and then maybe even throw in, and I'm going to be doing a training course. You are welcome to send any of your employees or have any of your employees participate by GoToMeeting or WebEx. That would be a plus. That would be like a little bonus on top of the agreement.
Yes. Well, I would imagine since the consulting is software, that software consultants, once you get plugged in as the expert, it's almost like you're going back to the same dentist because they understand your teeth or your mouth. You're going back to the same doctor because they've got your medical files. If Lynn's husband has lost 75%, there's a little red flag going up there. Maybe Lynn's husband might not be as good as he thinks he is, which then is a whole separate issue of maybe look at a new career field.
Right. Can we get in one more question, John?
Let's go.
Well, this is one that I think a lot of people can identify with. This is from Jim in Portland. When one applies online, as many employers are requiring now, what is the best way to know who and how to address a cover letter? And then how do you suggest following up when the only contact a person has is the HR department?
Okay, very, very good question. I'm going to take a shot at this, and then you give us your years of experience. The cover letter, I recommend that the cover letter accompany the application process. Usually there is a request for resume, and so the cover letter would be the first document that would be part of the resume. So that takes care of that topic. Usually by the time an opportunity gets to the Human Resource Department, the job seeker's lost the advantage because the hiring person has delegated this. The hiring person has not been able to find anyone through his or her own search. And now HR is in control. And I think maybe that's what Jim is concerned about, is this his only contact is HR. So you are in love with LinkedIn. You have sold me on that as a huge resource. So our job seeker has to go to LinkedIn to find somebody that works for that company that's not in HR, and to meet with that person to find out who is that department head that has that vacancy. And I want to go to that person and ask some questions about the nature of the position. You're going to get to the front chair of the line if you can get face-to-face with that hiring person outside of the loop of filling out the application form and having that screening meeting with HR. So, Linda, take it from there.
Well, I totally agree with you. In fact, as soon as one sees an application and for a particular job with a particular company, my first suggestion is go directly to LinkedIn, start doing your research, and try to determine logically who would be the person that would be the hiring manager. Would it be a manager, a director, a VP of what? You know, marketing, finance, accounting. Because most companies, the people are on LinkedIn, and you could at least get the name of the person, at the very least send information, you know, a personalized communication to the person who's the actual decision maker. Now, ideally, we're trying to network in and get introduced, get referred to that person. We can always go back and do the online application.
Absolutely, yes. And unfortunately, once you have made that application, then contacting someone else, it gets a little awkward and, in a sense, undermines your statement that you're contacting so-and-so to get some more information to determine if this position really fits your career goals. Well, if you've already applied, that sounds like doublespeak. Linda, thank you for today. We're getting the signal that our time is up. This has been great. Really, really appreciate your insights. Thank you.
Thanks, John. My pleasure. My pleasure.
And so that brings to a close our Job Seeker broadcast for this week. Our host has been job search and career advancement expert John Bradley. John is president and founder of the IDAC Group, and he's been helping mid-career men and women find their sweet spot since 1973. In addition to counseling mid-career men and women, John has authored 4 career advancement books. The IDAC Group has assisted over 30,000 career seekers nationwide. And John has personally trained over 600 counselors, college professors, and consultants in career advancement and job search. He's personally selected 12 of these 600 whom he features as preferred counselors on his website. These men and women are independent practitioners whom John has personally trained. They are not employees nor affiliated with the IDAC Group, and they have not paid any fee to be featured on this broadcast nor on IDAC's website. They are good, honest professionals who have gained John's approval over many years of successful practice. I'm Evan Newman, and I encourage you to join us next week at the same time for our next live broadcast. Do you know someone who is frustrated in their job search? Why not send them a tweet, email, or Facebook note about our free broadcast? Maybe your friend can learn something which will land them that next job. We invite you to participate in our broadcast by sending your job search questions during our live broadcast. Those questions received during the live broadcast will receive John's priority attention. Thanks for listening, best wishes, and may God bless you in your job search.